standing like a statue. Alpha One, do you know what you are? Tag asked in a soothing voice. He took another step. It seemed as if the droid tensed. I'm very happy to see you awake and alert. He cautiously took another step. The small whine of servos accompanied Alpha One, cocking its head, and it studied Tag as he sidled up beside it. You may need to lie down and rest while your sensors adjust to all this new input, Tag said, placing a hand on Alpha One's cool alloy shoulder. That was a mistake. The droid grabbed his wrist, yanked it away, then threw itself at Tag in a fury, arms flailing clumsily. Tag dove out of the way and it crashed to the deck, tripping over its own legs. Please, I'm not going to hurt you, Tag said. The droid teetered and tried to stand, its eyes locked with Tag's, and it rolled, arms stretched. An electronic clicking sounded from its open mouth as if it were letting out some kind of growl. Alpha, Tag said, grabbing the droid's wrist to help it up. The droid struggled in his grasp, twisting and bucking. Its eyes remained locked on Tag's, and the strange growling grew louder. With a yank, it freed itself from Tag's grasp and stumbled backward, then thudded against the bulkhead. The impact resonated up through the shelves above it. Boxes of labware clanked together and Alpha One spun. It shielded its face with its hands, though nothing fell. You're all right, Tag cooed. You're all right. The droid charged, its weight slammed against him. The blow knocked the breath out of him and pain ricocheted through his already beaten body. He doubled over, gasping for air, and held out a hand weakly to ward off the raging droid. Alpha rammed him again. It grappled Tag, but it still hadn't achieved full motor control, allowing Tag to escape its grip and leap to the terminal. He scrolled through the commands to get to the emergency shutdown button. Another lurching force hit his side before he could press it, and he went down hard, his head cracking against the terminal. Cold metal fingers wrapped around his neck. He gulped but couldn't breathe. Beady black eyes stared into his. Alpha's face no longer seemed so stolid and unreadable. Instead, Tag thought he saw a glimmer of fear in those eyes. He leveled a kick at the droid's legs and Alpha tumbled. The half-living machine should be strong enough to parry his attacks and kill him with ease. Before the pirate's assault on the Argo, the droid had lifted patience and been responsible for moving heavy equipment throughout the medbay. But it seemed unable to harness that strength now. The synth biobrain was still getting used to its body. It was like a child, a baby, slowly learning what its fingers and toes were for. That's it, Tag thought. But he didn't have time to explore the idea further. Alpha struggled to its feet. It launched another attack, and Tag ducked a swinging silver arm. The droid wobbled toward him, launching a salvo of clumsy punches and half-hearted slaps. It had no real concept of how to fight. Tag was thankful he hadn't preloaded any such skills into the synth biobrain. That had also been part of Tag's mistake, but he didn't have time to dwell on it. The droid pitched forward and Tag dodged its assault. It clanged into the exam table and knocked the table over. Tumbling over its own legs again, Alpha One fell against the closed lab incubator. It shot a hand out to break its fall. Its metal fist plunged through the polyglass and cracks spiderwebbed around the hole. The droid pulled its hand back, but it was stuck up to its wrist. Now, Tag could definitely see a panicked expression cross the droid's face. It yanked and twisted. Metal groaned and popped. One of the safety bolts holding the incubator in place against the bulkhead broke loose, and the incubator slowly tilted, then crashed over Alpha. The droid tried to roll away, and the tether connecting it with the terminal snapped free from the port on its torso. Other plastic dishes and small cylindrical tubes full of synth biotissue samples spilled from the incubator. The dishes and tubes broke and rolled across the desk. Tag's stomach dropped as he watched his experimental subjects burst and wither outside the safety of the incubator. Most were crushed under Alpha's body as the droid writhed, trying to escape from the bulky incubator. It would take months of labor to replace the synth biotissues Alpha One was wrecking now. No! Tag yelled. Stop! He watched in horror. His only viable experiment, Alpha One, was now on the loose. An immature synth biobrain in a powerful body threatened to destroy everything he had left aboard the Argo. The droid's free arm pushed and shoved, still struggling to free itself from the fallen incubator. Its hand smacked against the bulky device over and over. Tag's mind sped back to his earlier thought. Anger started to give way to sympathy. This droid wasn't trying to wreak havoc. It hadn't really tried to kill him out of malice. It had growled first, given him an animalistic warning. The synth bio being was frightened. It must feel alone, scared, desperate to survive. Like him. And its mind was somewhere between the awareness of a newborn unaccustomed to its new world and an animal acting only on instinct. But regardless of the sympathy he felt, it needed to be stopped. Chapter 20. Tag rushed to Alpha's side. He scooped up the tether but realized there was no way to reach the port in Alpha's torso to plug it in. The port was hidden under the incubator, which meant he needed to free the droid in order to connect the tether and shut Alpha down. Releasing the droid would be a gamble. Every second it spent growing accustomed to its body meant it would be stronger, faster, smarter. The varied emotions gracing its face now were enough to show Tag it was already learning how to sync the biological inputs and outputs of the synth biobrain with its mechanical exterior. The incubator shuddered. Alpha's palm pressed flat against it, and the droid pushed upward. It no longer flailed in desperate, ineffective swipes at the machine. It was learning. The incubator rose a centimeter, and Alpha's arm shook as it lifted the machine. But its hand slipped, and the incubator crashed hard on its torso again. Tag was certain the droid didn't have any type of pain response, but Alpha's face contorted in a seemingly agonized expression. Frustration and fear seemed to be getting to it. The droid's mouth opened and closed as more electric chirps and beeps emanated from it. Tag wasn't sure if it was crying out or asking for help. He approached the droid and the chirping went wild. Maybe it was warning him off. He ignored it and curled his fingers around the edge of the incubator, then lifted, his muscles straining. Alpha began pushing with its free arm. The incubator slowly rose and Alpha squirmed out from under the machine. Its other arm remained stuck in the polyglass. Tag gave the polyglass a solid kick, then another, and another until it broke around Alpha's wrist. The droid pulled back its arm and scuttled away. The incubator was too heavy for Tag to handle alone, and he dropped it. More polyglass shattered and clinked along the deck. Mental anguish rippled through him as he imagined the other experiments demolished by the crashed incubator, and he winced. A slow whirring sound caught his attention. Alpha was lifting itself back to its feet. This time, its legs didn't wobble. They moved slowly, naturally. It looked at Tag and seemed to size him up. Maybe this gesture of helping the droid had been enough. Maybe now it understood Tag wasn't trying to hurt it. "You're okay now," he said. "See? I helped you. I don't want to see you hurt." He gathered up the loose tether from the terminal again and took another step. Alpha didn't cower or click. "I'm going to hook this back up. This is for your safety." Alpha's head tilted to the side, but it didn't give any sign it understood him. He reached out warily with the tether, and Alpha's gaze dropped to Tag's outstretched arm. Tag glanced between the droid and the port on its torso. "So far, so good." The plug clicked into place, and he breathed a sigh of relief. But his relief was short-lived. The small click ignited Alpha's fury, and the droid leapt at him again like a falcon swooping down on a hapless rodent. This time, its hands weren't so shaky or unsure when it grappled him. The two struggled, crashing against the bulkhead and the toppled exam table as they wrestled in a tangle of mechanical and biological limbs. Pain rocketed through Tag's pre-existing injuries and the new welts and bruises as Alpha battered him. Something about the tether had unleashed the beast within. He wasn't sure what was going through the droid's mind, but he didn't give it too much thought as he held his arms up, trying to deflect the metal hands flying through the air aimed at his face. Alpha threw its weight at him, and he fell, trapped under the barrage of metal limbs. A left hook connected with his cheek, sending his jaw chattering. Clicking and chirping erupted from Alpha's mouth. Tag rolled to his left and escaped a vicious knee aimed at his chest. The violent clang of metal against metal echoed as the droid slammed against the deck. It twisted and righted itself, aiming for Tag once again. The terminal was behind Alpha. The tether had remained attached throughout the ferocious struggle. Tag knew he had no choice. It was either destroy Alpha or shut it off. He couldn't bear to kill his creation, but if it wouldn't let him near the terminal, his hand would be forced. Several strewn tools glinted around the deck. A soldering gun lay next to a tumbleweed of wires. Then he eyed a screwdriver. It might be the best option for a weapon he had. Alpha barreled forward with its arms outstretched. Tag ducked to his right, dove and rolled. He picked up the screwdriver and deflected another blow from Alpha with his free hand. His fingers wrapped around Alpha's wrist, and he tried to hold the droid's arm back. Fire burned through his muscles, his arms shaking with effort. In his other hand, he held the screwdriver, ready to strike. A single blow, straight through Alpha's chin and into the synth biobrain, would end the droid's attacks for good. The droid didn't seem to know what was coming. Tag swung the screwdriver up, and it connected with the screeching of rending metal. But he hadn't aimed for Alpha's head. The screwdriver stabbed through Alpha's palm, and Tag drove the hand back. The end of the screwdriver jutted from the other side of Alpha's hand. Tag took advantage of momentum and speared the screwdriver into the side of the incubator. Alpha stared at its hand, now secured against the incubator. The droid yanked on it. It wouldn't hold for long, but it might buy Tag some time. He rushed to the terminal. Alpha thrashed, and the screwdriver popped free. It clattered on the deck. Tag's fingers danced on the terminal as he searched for the shutdown command. Heaving, clanking footsteps sounded as Alpha loped after him. The red shutdown command glared on the holoscreen. Tag's finger shot toward it right as two metal arms wrapped around his torso. He flew back and his body slammed into the bulkhead. Chapter 21. Tag gasped, his head pounding from where his skull had cracked into the bulkhead. Each breath seemed to ignite the pain in his ribs. He stared at Alpha and waited for the droid to continue its assault. But the droid remained motionless, lying across him. Its heavy weight crushed into his chest, making it harder to breathe and worsening the agony. Grunting, he shoved the droid off and took shallow, rapid breaths to avoid the intense fire raging in his ribs. A low laugh escaped his lips. Then another. Another, and another came out until he was laughing maniacally, like a crazy hermit. Each guffaw was like kindling to the flames burning in his chest, but he didn't care. He was alive enough to appreciate the irony of his exploits. He'd barely escaped the pirates by acting like a marine, pilot, and captain all at once, roles he hadn't been trained for, yet the very thing he was supposed to be an expert in, science and medicine, had almost spelled his doom. The laughter soon faded. He still had plenty of time to kill himself searching for Lieutenant Vasquez. No need to end himself here before ETA 5 had its chance. With one hand grasping the terminal, he pulled himself upright and hunched over the display. A small status report stated that the synth bio unit's shutdown had been completed successfully. He thought about scrapping his plan to bring Alpha to life, but he still needed an AI system alive on this ship to restore the repair bots and the T-drive. This time, he'd try a different tack. He dragged Alpha's unwieldy body across the deck. After setting the exam table upright, he pulled Alpha over it, one limb at a time. He secured Alpha's hands and feet to the table with metal latches, all the while chiding himself for not trying this before. Back at the terminal, he studied the holoscreen. He wouldn't bring the whole unit to life again. Instead, he activated the data upload link to Alpha's brain through the tether and initiated the upload of all the Argo's intranet data. Everything from manuals and documentation regarding ship functions to research reports and literature and films began to transfer from the ship's enormous database to the synth biobrain. It was a lifetime, multiple lifetimes, of knowledge being stuffed into Alpha's mind. A progress bar blinked across the holoscreen. The estimate indicated the upload would take almost 3 days. By that time, Tag hoped to be off the ship and headed to meet up with Vasquez. He was disappointed by the slow speed, but He had expected as much. From his preliminary tests, he knew the limitations of using biology-based computers prevented Alpha from downloading, uploading, and processing data as fast as standard hardware-based computers. Still, he hoped his plan would work. The extra days connected to the tether would give Alpha's brain time to mature and sort through the information. Maybe it would be able to gain enough self-awareness to understand what it was and to realize Tag truly didn't mean it any harm. Maybe it would unravel the complexities of the T-drive and the Argo's repair systems. That might be hoping for too much, but Tag had no idea what to realistically expect of Alpha's capabilities. In case Alpha's brain was finally able to grasp English, Tag typed out a note on the terminal to the droid. He explained his actions in their first encounter and why he'd attempted to breathe life into the synth bio-droid. He wrote about the pirates' attack and the world they'd found themselves on, along with his mission to find Lieutenant Vasquez and, hopefully, a way back to the SRES Montenegro. It felt strange. Writing this note was like penning a letter to a child he'd never had. He left the lab. Once in the med bay, he locked the hatches to the lab in hopes that the extra security measures would stand up to Alpha if the droid woke in an uncontrollable rage and tore itself free from the manacles holding it to the exam table. The next couple of days went by in a steady blur. Tag spent his time checking and rechecking his equipment for his adventure into the wild tundra of ETA-5. He ensured his EVA suit's wrist terminal was loaded with all the necessary information on ETA-5, which turned out to be a disappointingly meager amount. From the Argo's data stores, he scrounged up a rudimentary map and a pointer indicating where he would meet Lieutenant Vasquez. But other than that, he found little on expected weather patterns or the flora and fauna of the planet. One look outside the bridge viewport made him think that maybe there was no such information to be had. Weather. Frigid. Constantly. Life? Nothing, except for a stranded medical officer and a killer synth bio unit he'd created. Plus, he guessed, some crazy alien species Vasquez had foolishly decided to study here. He shook his head. But the SRE Navy wouldn't have sent an anthropologist out to study a desolate planet full of some creatures strange enough to call this Arctic paradise home. There must be something else here of interest that she hadn't reported, or maybe it was just classified, right? He trod to the cargo bay and the pile of gear he'd gathered near the hatch. After donning the EVA suit he'd scrapped together, he took a deep breath and opened the hatch. The change in pressure threatened to pull him from the passageway and into the compromised cargo bay. He braced himself, then rushed to drag the crates of emergency food and medical supplies, along with his weapons, into the cargo bay before sealing the hatch once again. Small gauges on his heads-up display within the EVA suit reported the air was a balmy minus 55 degrees centigrade. Snow and ice had blown in from the ruptured hull. He recognized a particular snowdrift as the air car buried under the white fluff. The sensor array stated the oxygen concentration was 11.5%. That meant mental impairment and unbearable fatigue should Tag lose access to his EVA's oxygen supply. A shiver snuck through him. He wondered what would be worse, freezing to death or dying a slow death from oxygen deprivation. Neither seemed particularly intriguing. He forced himself past his morbid thoughts and unburied the air car. One by one, he loaded each of the crates and bags within the car. Once the car was ready, he could delay the inevitable no longer. Vasquez, if she was alive, would be waiting for the Argo. She'd no doubt be disappointed at the lackluster rendezvous committee, but at least Tag wouldn't be abandoning her on ETA-5. Who knew? Maybe she'd prefer to die with him aboard the Argo rather than being stuck out there in the snow and ice. Tag ducked into the air car and started its engine. The car growled to life and pushed itself off the deck, hovering about a meter above the snow and ice blowing through the bay. Another push of a button activated the doors to the now purposeless airlock of the Argo's cargo bay. He drove into the waiting chamber and initiated the automatic depressurizing process. It didn't take long, given the ruptured cargo bay atmosphere already matched the low atmospheric pressure on ETA-5. The hatch opened, parting sideways. Snow and ice blew against the windshield, and Tag swore he could feel the icy chill despite the controlled atmosphere within the air car. Blue light flooded in, tinged by the strange clouds drifting overhead. Tag throttled the air car and burst out of the Argo through an accumulating snowbank and onto ETA-5's surface. A small hollow projection glowed red near the windshield. It displayed his location along with that of the rendezvous point almost 300 clicks away. He started the air car forward. Harsh winds shook and jostled the vehicle. His grip around the wheel tightened and his arms strained as he fought against the strong wind's attempt to throw him off course. "Here I come, Vasquez," he muttered through gritted teeth. "I hope you've got better news for me than I have for you." Chapter 22. Through the polyglass windshield and windows, Tag gawked at the landscape expanding before him, where tall spires of rock and ice broke the waves of white snowdrifts stretching to the horizon. Tornadoes of snow and frost spun under the green and blue flashes of lightning cracking from the blanket of clouds. Spears of sunlight from ETA periodically pierced through the dense cloud coverage, appearing like pathways straight to the heavens. Each time a gust of harsh wind buffeted the air car, he struggled with the controls to keep the vehicle pointed toward the rendezvous point. He was helpless as a fly caught in a thunderstorm, but even surrounded by this dangerous new place and whatever mysteries it held, he couldn't help feeling awe at the alien environment around him. He hadn't realized how much he'd missed a sky. It might not be filled with azures and whites of an Earth sky, but it was still a sky. Not ribbed alloy corridors, bulkheads, and the occasional porthole with a view of distant stars. No. For the first time since he'd left Earth on assignment with the Argo years ago, he was no longer trapped inside a spaceship or a space station. He was back in the wilderness. True, unadulterated wilderness. Against every logical part of his brain telling him it was foolish, he wanted to jump out of the car and into that snow. He wanted to watch the white fluff trickle between his fingers. He wanted to know what it was like to have his boots on the ground. Real ground. But his want to stay alive was stronger, and he remained in the air car, fighting against the wind. Ice crystals pinged on the windshield. The constant tinkle of the little crystals and the howl of wind were his only companions as he drove between two towering spires. The shadows loomed over him. He couldn't shake the feeling that they were watching him and guarding this planet from intruders, that at any moment they might come tumbling down to bury him in ice and rock. A sigh of relief escaped his lips when he passed them without incident. Before him was an enormous, wide river. Its surface was frozen, but the ice was so clear he saw water moving far beneath it. The river snaked across his path. He guided the air car over it. Unsheltered by the ice and rock formations, the car shuddered. A strong blast of wind knocked it off course and the car spun sideways. Tag held tight to the controls while throttling the car. It shook and bucked as if it were a living thing telling him to give up. To give in to the wind. That this planet would win any fight, any attempt to survive. Adrenaline continued surging through his veins, making his fingers shake. He reminded himself to unclench his jaw and he corrected his course once again to point westward, where a line of mountains protruded along the other side of the river. A small tributary led from the mountains to the river. It seemed to wind under the rock and ice spires near the mouth of a canyon. He drove, following the tributary, and plunged into the canyon, taking shelter from the winds. His anxiety settled as the drive became easier and he could breathe normally again. He continued on for some time until he grew accustomed to the relative peace and loosened his grip on the steering controls. The small patches of sunlight that trickled through the clouds refracted through the icy formations that stretched over Tag like a tunnel. The light cast a blue, ethereal glow. It was a striking, beautiful vista. He couldn't help wondering what all this would be like should the ice melt and the rivers flow free. A distant rumble caught his ears, ending his daydreaming. He craned his neck, searching for the cause of the noise. But with the ice and rock stretching above him, he couldn't see outside the narrow perspective granted to him at the bottom of the canyon. The rumble growled louder. His heart thundered against his injured ribs, and his nerves lit up. The rumble turned to a roar. It was as if ETA-5 was a giant waking from its slumbers and it had found him, an intruder, lurking in its midst. "What now?" Tag said, still looking for the source of the din. Then he spotted it through a crack in the ice and rock. Distant plumes of soft white spurted into the blue-gray and green sky, and he saw the tops of the mountains. They were shifting, moving. No, not the mountains. The snow. Avalanche! He saw no nearby shelter from the incoming snow and ice tumbling down the mountainside. There were only two options. Race back to the safety of the Argo, or risk going forward, making progress and closing the gap to the rendezvous? Tag didn't spend time deliberating and put the car in full throttle. The vehicle shot forward, racing between crags of ice and rock through the ravine. The roar of the avalanche grew louder and louder, almost deafening. Ice and snow zipped past him in a blur of white and blue. He hunched over the controls, sweat dripping over his forehead, but he didn't take his hands off the controls to clear it, choosing instead to race on. A massive crack echoed around him. It sounded as though lightning had blasted into the ground near him. But this was no arc of electricity. A tidal wave of snow exploded through the ice and stone formations along the tributary. The avalanche quickly filled the gully behind him and rolled after him, and it was gaining. He curved around a rock sticking up from the frozen river. Every time he maneuvered to avoid an obstacle, he lost a bit of forward velocity. It wasn't much, but it was enough to make him worry. Snow and ice piled behind him. He kept the car at full throttle. The edge of the tsunami of snow, ice, and rocks was meters from the rear of the car. He stared through the windshield before him, ready to dodge the next obstacle, but when he could, he stole a glance through the towering ice and rock structures, looking for any exit, any way out, anything to avoid being devoured by ETA-5. Then he heard something else, an almost deafening explosion and a flash of light. His pupils adjusted to the rapid change, and he twisted the controls when he saw a boulder sitting in his path. The side of the car scraped against the rock, letting out a jarring noise. The air car bobbed, knocked off its hovering trajectory. Another blast echoed over the ravine, through the tunnel of snow and rock, and pierced the cacophony of the avalanche. Whatever was responsible for that explosive sound, Tag hoped he didn't have to face it. He had enough to worry about with the oncoming avalanche. The meager headlights of the air car illuminated his path forward, no longer shining over solid, craggy rocks. There it was, an exit from the icy tunnel. The jumble of snow and ice was still chasing him, rumbling. He dodged another icy stalagmite and a patch of sharp rocks. Then the tunnel spit him out. Snow and ice sprayed behind him as the power of the avalanche dissipated, and it spread over the terrain Tag found himself in. He was free from the avalanche, free from its hungry chase. But it didn't take long for fear to etch its way into his mind again. He saw now what had caused the deafening blasts and what must have been responsible for starting the avalanche in the first place. Chapter 23. It was the most terrifying thunderstorm Tag had ever seen. Arcs of blue and green lightning webbed across the sky as if the whole atmosphere was cracking and falling apart in shards. The vicious light show exploded in volleys over the tundra, followed by deafening, throaty rumbles that seemed to crash on Tag from all sides at once. He pressed on through the terrifying display. The occasional mammoth stalagmite of ice and rock broke the rolling landscape. Snowdrifts rolled over the terrain like ever-shifting sand dunes. It was almost as if the canyon had delivered him to a brilliant white desert. Wind howled over the air car, carrying with it a strange mixture of fist-sized hail and snow. Tag winced each time an ice chunk slammed into the car. The vehicle was made to withstand small arms fire and take a beating exploring unknown territories, but he still found it difficult to believe it would survive the pounding it was enduring now. Each smack of hail against the car echoed in the cabin like the concussive blast of an energy cannon. Still, those noises paled in comparison to the roar of thunder tearing through the heavens as another barrage of lightning danced across the tundra. The thunder resonated through the car and into the wheel, shaking Tag's fingers. Or maybe it was just fear causing his fingers to tremble. This display of raw power terrified him almost more than the pirates had. He watched icy spires fall apart in the blasts of wind as more waves of snow shifted, falling in sheets from the mountains behind him. His eyes scanned the hollow projection from the aircar's terminal. He needed shelter, protection, anything. The bare bones map hardly gave accurate contour lines. It was next to useless. All he really saw was the glaring red dot that signified the rendezvous point with Vasquez, giving him nothing else to do but point the car in that direction. A gust of wind caught the car, so powerful and harsh that it threw the vehicle onto the ground and off its hovering path. The crunch of metal against ice made Tag wince, and he braced himself as the wind picked up the car and tossed it toward a crumbling stalagmite. He strained against the relentless winds, but he found he couldn't fight it. The effort was futile. Instead, he directed the car perpendicular to the wind's vector. As it pushed him sideways, at least he could move forward or backward enough to dodge the formidable ice and rock formations. He continued like this, battered by the elements, making slow progress. When the winds died down, which they seemed to do infrequently, he powered the car across the snowy plain, desperate to reach some modicum of shelter, somewhere to wait out this storm. It appeared as if the tundra would never end, nor would the storm. More lightning exploded overhead, and thunder assaulted his eardrums. He almost let out a maniacal laugh, barely containing his own sanity. Who in the three hells is Vasquez trying to study on this planet, he wondered. How could anything live here? ETA-5 was like a hungry animal itself, ready to chew life up and spit it out. Tag wondered if he'd ever actually find Vasquez alive. Maybe she'd been buried by the snow and ice long ago. There would be no evidence she'd ever been here. Maybe everything was pointless. But as he pressed on, struggling and desperate, the storm soon gave way to a strangely peaceful calm. Snow still fell, but only in gentle waves. Winds carried the snowflakes, allowing them to dance across the car's windshield, and gentle snowflakes were the only things the winds seemed to carry now. The gusts became soft whispers over the car, no longer intent on smashing it against the impressive stalagmites. The cloud cover remained, but dissipated enough to let the characteristic ETA-5 ethereal blue glow of light bathe the planet. From hell to heaven in minutes. Tag chugged onward, wondering how long his luck would hold. Chapter 24. The allure of being under an open sky and outside a cramped ship no longer held the same power over Tag. ETA-5 had attempted to kill him too many times in the past several hours for him to enjoy the solitude of night settling over the planet. The light flittering through the clouds slowly dissipated. One of ETA-5's three moons peeked through a small gap in the cloud coverage, casting a ghoulish glow over the tundra. Tag's stomach growled and his eyelids drooped. Without adrenaline surging through him, every muscle seemed fatigued and cramped from his constant battle against the elements. And still, he had more than 100 clicks to go until he reached the rendezvous point. He couldn't let exhaustion defeat him. He didn't know what dangers lurked in the night. Trying to steal sleep here on the snowdrifts meant a storm could catch him unaware. It would only take a few seconds for those powerful winds to dash the aircar against a spire of rocks and ice. The snow seemed supernaturally bright, almost beautiful. Almost. Tag was now well accustomed to the dangers that lurked within that beauty. He increased the intensity of the car's headlights, and swaths of light broke through the murkiness in front of the hovering vehicle. He drove on, listening to the hum of the engine and the whistle of the wind. As he stared off in the distance, the drive became almost hypnotic, the landscape blurring together. His head drooped and nodded forward, his chin tucked to his chest. He jolted himself awake and tried to shake the sleepiness off, but his aching limbs and injuries urged him to rest. Instead, he parked the air car, allowing it to hover in place. He told himself he wouldn't stand still for long. He dug through his supplies and found a packet of dehydrated swill the SRE Navy generously called coffee. He emptied the packet into a self-heating thermos and then added water. The first sip of coffee started to revitalize him. Warmth spread from his esophagus and stomach through his chest and limbs as he downed the hot drink. "Why did you come here, Vasquez?" he asked ETA-5, shaking his head. Most extraterrestrial anthropologist missions were shrouded in secrecy. Who knew what new technologies or races existed that the SRE Navy might be able to adapt for its own uses? It seemed the policy was to study new life forms or investigate the possibility of new life forms on distant planets and only tell the general populace what they'd found if the aliens or technologies turned out to be useless to the SRE. TAG knew it was a sad state of colonial expansion, but what could you do? He took another gulp of coffee. Too many groups had tried to rebel and splinter off from the SRE precisely because they'd found some ancient alien technology or found new alien allies they could use to defeat the SRE. In fact, that was how the SRE had subverted power from the United Nations. The discovery of a ship with faster-than-light capabilities changed the face of interstellar exploration, communications, and warfare in one fell swoop. The SRE had been the lucky lottery winners to find the ship, develop the technology for human ships, and use it to overwhelm the UN on Earth. The UN had had no choice but to let the SRE envelop them. And the SRE had certainly suffered its fair share of strife. Plenty of smaller colonies and corporations, especially those that thought they were safe at the outskirts of distant solar systems, had tried their hand at rebellion. TAG wondered if the pirates he'd encountered were part of some group determined to antagonize the SRE through guerrilla warfare. They could just as easily be profiteering vagabonds, but their power armor suits and weapons seemed to indicate they were more advanced than that. Maybe they too had found some powerful alien technology. They might be gearing up for a war against the SRE. Tag's eyes searched the distant gray horizon as the car pushed forward. A wind picked up, jostling the vehicle sideways, but it wasn't a tenth as strong or frightening as earlier. He settled back into his seat and took a sip of coffee. Three hells, maybe those pirates had discovered something on ETA 5, something here they didn't want the SRE to have or even know about. That might explain their ruthless determination to destroy anyone and anything SRE when they attacked the Argo. A sinking feeling threatened to overwhelm him. He prayed they hadn't already gotten to Vasquez. His thoughts whirred between these theories cropping up in his mind. Why were they here? He still saw no evidence of anything remotely useful on this planet, other than the anomalous atmospheric shielding. Maybe the planet itself could be used as a goddamned weapon? Lure travelers and explorers to its surface and let the unforgiving weather do its business. Tag laughed. In between the mixture of exhaustion and caffeine, he found the thought more humorous than he knew he should. But then a light glimmered in the distance. He squinted, leaning forward in his seat. Was that a star just above the horizon? No. No. It was too low for that. There, again. His heart leapt. Definitely a light. A bluish-purple light. It wavered and swayed. Maybe it was just the snow and moonlight playing tricks on his eyesight. He gave the car more power. He shouldn't be racing so quickly through the dark, even with the aid of his headlights, but curiosity urged him on. The blue-purple light became larger as he approached. Excitement coursed through him. Then he cursed at himself and killed the headlights. Damn it, Brewer, he thought. Letting curiosity get the better of you. Maybe that light belonged to the pirates, to whatever they were hiding out here. And here he came, driving over the shadowy landscape with headlights glaring. He could see the blue-purple light easily enough, so there was no reason someone or something hadn't already seen him. He slowed the air car on his approach. The eerie glow seemed to be emanating from between a couple of icy stalagmites. As he grew closer, he spotted what looked like steam rising from the glowing spot. Then he realized the glow wasn't coming from a light source he could readily see. Rather, it was light flooding from an opening, like the front door of a house open in the middle of the night. He eyed the map. He should turn back. Give this strange spot a wide berth. He still had some ways to go to hit the rendezvous point. But what if the map was wrong? What if this was the rendezvous point? Maybe Vasquez had set up some kind of signal. Undoubtedly, she knew how difficult it would be for a search crew to find her in the intermittent blizzards sweeping across ETA 5. Tag decided caution would still be best. Instead of driving straight up to this tunnel, he paused farther away. He scrounged a pair of binoc lenses from his supplies and took a closer look. As he'd suspected, the tunnel jutted from deep underground. He had been surprised the snow didn't simply clog the entrance to this glowing underworld, but the steam rising in wispy twists gave some possible explanation. Wherever that tunnel led, it was warm, hot even. Tag continued his path around the tunnel to see if he could find a good vantage point. Maybe if he found the right position, he could get a better idea of where it led. He started the hover car up the side of a large snowdrift. A loud bang shook the vehicle. His head slammed forward into the wheel. His vision blurred and the car smashed into the snowbank. White fluff exploded everywhere and rained down over the windshield. The car stalled. Tag unlatched his restraints and he stood, wobbling, ready to figure out what had happened. Was this a storm picking back up? He hadn't felt the winds. Blue lights pulsed outside and splashed against the car. The vehicle shook and Tag fell, crashing to the floor. This wasn't a storm. This was an attack. Chapter 25. Tag dug through his pack and grabbed one of the mini-gauze rifles. He strapped a few extra magazines to his EVA suit. Another volley of small arms fire walloped the car, and a light flashed on the car's HUD warning that the engines had died. No shit, Tag said, gritting his teeth. So much for the air car standing up to small arms fire. He took shelter behind a few of his supply packs. The space was cramped, but without the normal 10-man crew, the vehicle could accommodate. He still had room to maneuver around the cramped hold area. He peeked out of the rear window. The gunfire had ceased. No telltale muzzle flashes signaled the whereabouts of his attackers. He considered his options. Stay in the car. The vehicle might crumple under more fire and he'd be a sitting duck. It wasn't going anywhere now. But running on foot wouldn't be great either. He'd be leaving most of his supplies behind, and trying to lose his ambushers in the snow would probably make him lose his own bearings. Screw it, Tag thought. I didn't make it through everything else to die in a damn air car. He stormed out of the vehicle and pressed the mini-gauze stock to his shoulder, scanning the horizon with his barrel as he tried to sight up his enemies. A flash of blue fire shuddered from near the base of a stalagmite. He squeezed the trigger and returned a volley. Slugs lanced into the spire, sheets of ice fell and exploded on the ground. Shards flew, deadly as any man-made shrapnel. Tag rushed to the cover of another spire. He tried to peer through the darkness and sought any moving shapes or more gunfire, but found nothing. Dashing across the tundra and continuing toward the rendezvous point would mean he'd have to run straight through patches with almost no cover. But what else could he do? Go into that tunnel? Streams of pulse fire peppered the stalagmite he hid behind. A slow groan grew louder and the pillar started to topple sideways. He jumped and dove into the snow to avoid it. His grip loosened around his mini-gauze and it skidded away from him, burying itself in the snow. The spire hit the ground with a whoomp. Snow and ice sprayed up in a frosty cloud. Fragments of rock and ice pinged against his EVA suit. The ground trembled. Then he heard something else. Footsteps crunching over the snow. He scrambled to recover his weapon, his gloved fingers stretching desperate to reach the gun. Blue bursts melted the snow around him and he ducked behind the fallen stalagmite. If he couldn't grab the mini-gauze, he was at least thankful he'd ransacked the Argo Marine's EVA suit. He pulled out a pulse pistol from his holster. Jumping up from cover, he wheeled the gun around on the first moving shape he spotted. He squeezed the trigger in rapid bursts, orange pulse fire cutting through the darkness. Most of the rounds sputtered uselessly into snow and ice, but one hit his target. The attacker fell, holding their leg, and Tag was aiming for a finishing blow when an incoming volley spattered the stalagmite. He crouched and crept to another point. These people wouldn't finish him off without a fight. If they weren't going to let him run, they would go down with him. He peeked around another broken chunk of ice and he saw someone rushing to aid the fallen attacker. Sending a spray of pulse fire, he warded them off. A responding barrage hit his position. Then, a sobering thought surged past his adrenaline-fueled anger. He'd cut down someone with pulse fire. The pirate's armor had easily withstood such small arms fire aboard the Argo, as his crew had found out with devastating results. So why had he so easily sent that person sprawling with a weak pulse pistol shot? It felt as though an icy arrow had stabbed through Tag's heart. Who were these attackers? Did they belong to the group of pirates but have less advanced technology for some odd reason? Or were they someone else entirely? He gasped in shallow breaths, confusion eating at his mind. It would be yet another ironic twist for his terrifying adventure if he'd actually attacked people who were going to help him. If Vasquez had been sent to this planet, there must have been some friendly group somewhere. More gunfire cracked into the stalagmite. He crawled behind it, staying out of sight. The shots were wild, desperate. Things started to click together in his mind. Another possible explanation crept from amid the confusion, even as more blue pulses screamed through the air. These people were trying desperately to keep him from something. Maybe, just maybe, they were on the lookout for those armored pirates just like him. But how could he know for sure? He peered through a crack in the ice and trained his pulse pistol on one of the dark shadows moving across the snow. With doubt weighing so heavily on his mind, he couldn't squeeze the trigger. His conscience nagged at him, begged for him to confirm he wasn't just shooting down people trying to defend themselves against the same foe the Argo had fought. He twisted and peered at the tundra behind him. Running was still an option. He might get lucky. They might not see him running over the tundra. They might not pursue him, and their shots might miss at such a range. But then, what would he do for food and water? He could die of dehydration out there before ever even getting close to Vasquez's rendezvous point. All of his supplies, all of his equipment were aboard the wrecked air car. Taking a deep breath, Tag puffed out his chest and holstered his pistol. Maybe he'd die like this, too. But if he was going to die anyway, at least he'd get some answers first. These people might turn out to be allies, and if not, there was always the possibility of negotiation. Tag clicked a button on his EVA suit so his voice boomed out of an external speaker. This is Lieutenant Commander Tag Brewer of the SRES Argo. I want to talk. Silence. No more gunfire. Could it be as he had thought? It was time to face these people, friend, foe, or somewhere in between. With his hands raised, he slowly stood. Let's settle this peacefully. I am... An arc of blue flashed. A wet pain struck through Tag's shoulder and he went down hard. Chapter 26. Air whooshed out of the singed hole in Tag's suit, and he desperately threw his gloved hand over the puncture. Atmosphere and steam bled out between his fingers, freezing in contact with the frigid air. It looked like a shower of icy sparks sputtering from his EVA suit. Blood seeped out over his shoulder, oozing out in dark, crimson streaks that trickled over his chest and upper arm, hardening like cooling lava with the frigid air. I am not, he tried to yell into his mic again, but his voice was sucked out of him by the intense cold permeating his suit. It turned out he was going to die anyway. I failed you, Vasquez. Through the whistle of escaping air, he heard crunching footsteps. To finish me off, he thought. With one hand clenched over the injury, his fingers crept toward his holstered pistol. He curled his fingers around the pistol's grip and pulled it unsteadily from the holster. It wavered in the air before him. Painful tremors shook his limb as he tried to hold the weapon straight. A slight pinch bit at his flesh as the EVA suit administered a low dose of painkillers, enough to reduce the pain, but not enough to stop it. A dose of anticoagulants and regen flesh stimulants flowed through the needle next, and he prayed they would work fast enough to stop the bleeding and begin the healing process. Let him at least fight off whoever dared take him down. The first person showed up at the end of the fallen icy spire. Tag leveled his pistol and squeezed the trigger. The bright pulse shot went high. The person continued their approach, aiming their own weapon. They barked something at him. Something incomprehensible. It sounded more like radio static than language. Tag crawled closer to the stalagmite so his back was against the ice. He pulled himself upright, and the additional bracing helped steady his arm. He aimed at the attacker once more. But a flash of pulse fire crashed into his pistol. The weapon rocketed from his hand, spinning through the air and landed uselessly several meters away. His fingers trembled from the impact, but he held them in front of his face. All five were still there. A hand grabbed his uninjured shoulder and someone thrust a pistol into his face. He turned to see two more individuals staring down at him over the barrels of their weapons. He looked upon the victors' faces. and his whole body went weak before flushing with anger. He recognized those orange visors and the black armor. The leg pieces and arms weren't as thin or sleek as those of the invaders on the Argo, but there was no doubt that the armor worn by these people had come from the same place. The pirates. A curse echoed through Tag's mind. He'd taken mercy on these people because of his damned conscience, and what had that accomplished? His vision started to blur, his nose was numb, and he was losing feeling in his fingers. A mixture of sweat and tears from the cold froze along his face. Two of the pirates lifted him to his feet. Another stood in front, holding his leg, limping. The one he'd shot. There were three total. That was it. He could have taken them. He could have ended this. The one limping hissed static at the other two. They, in turn, hissed their own static-like responses. It seemed like they were actually having a conversation, but Tag couldn't hope to follow it. Maybe he was delirious, losing oxygen. The limping one holstered its weapon, and the trio began dragging Tag through the snow. Tag resisted and writhed in their grip. He pried at one of the pirate's gloved fingers around his shoulder, but his strength was flagging. None of his struggling or twisting seemed to perturb them. He continued fighting, but his hopes started to fade as he watched the trail his body left in the snow. The air car, crashed in the snowbank, was now bleeding slow tendrils of smoke and atmosphere. He'd failed. He'd never make it to the rendezvous point in time. Vasquez would be stuck out here, marooned like him. Left to wonder what had happened to her promised exit from this planet, if her years spent on ETA 5 were anything like Tag's past couple of days, she'd be dying to leave. Maybe even literally. His captors paused near the tunnel glowing blue and purple. The winds here died down. Sensors on Tag's suit reported the temperature had already risen to a considerable minus 15 degrees centigrade at the tunnel's entrance. He forced himself to his knees, ready to sprint. One of the pirates let out another burst of static. The other two responded in kind, and one shoved Tag back to the ground. The one with the limp bent in front of Tag. The man held a small device, shaped like a pistol. He held it out and rotated it for Tag to examine. Tag cocked his head, unsure what the pirate was trying to demonstrate. "What do you want? If you're going to kill me, just do it." The pirate let out a burst of scratchy noises in response. "I can't understand a damn thing you're saying." The pirate shook his head, then pressed the small pistol device to the hole in the shoulder of the suit. He pulled the trigger and Tag cringed, ready for another pulse round at point-blank range. Instead, the device sprayed some kind of sticky polymer over the hole. The individual strands melded together and clotted the atmosphere-leaking hole. Pressure levels in the suit returned to normal and the temperature stabilized. "Keeping me alive to torture me later?" Tag asked. The injured pirate made a barking sound that sounded like laughing. Tag was growing more and more nervous about the lack of communication between himself and his captors. Technologies existed to encrypt friendly voice comms so enemies couldn't understand. He wondered if that was what they were using. Maybe they intended to use him as a hostage or a prisoner. A spark of hope shimmered somewhere in the dark recesses of Tag's mind. It made sense. They probably did plan on letting him go, or at least bargaining for his life. They wouldn't want him to run away with any secrets, which was why they were encrypting their comms now. They'd had the entire Argo and its crew at their disposal, and they'd been hell-bent on destroying all SRE life aboard the ship. Tag didn't have long to consider before he felt the jab of a pulse pistol in his back. One of the encrypted voices of the pirates uttered a command. He didn't need to make sense of the words to understand the man wanted him to move. They marched him through the tunnel. But what use was he to them, really? "What do you want from me?" he demanded. Again, they ignored him as they trudged deeper underground. Small rocks glowed blue and purple on the wall. The more he studied them, the more he realized they weren't rocks at all, but rather some kind of strange, puffy plant or mold. Each shone brightly and gave the tunnel the ephemeral appearance he had spotted from several clicks away. Larger glowing plants blocked segments of the tunnel like curtains. The pirates pushed past the multicolored fronds and continued. Tag felt his jaw go slack at the sight of each. If he hadn't thought his life was in peril, he might have taken the time to admire the luminous flora guiding their path. His sensors reported increasing temperatures until they'd surpassed the freezing point. Even the oxygen levels were rising the deeper they went. His shoulder throbbed in pain more and more as his adrenaline and shock wore off. After they'd been trudging for long enough that the novelty of the glowing plants had worn off, he felt ready to beg these pirates for some kind of painkiller. The EVA suit's dosage was enough to jumpstart the healing process, but the suit was built to keep its user aware, carefully regulating what it administered so as not to render its user senseless and high. It wouldn't administer any more painkillers unless he was allowed to override the controls. He thought of all the emergency supplies he could use sitting above ground in his air car. If only he could take these three down. He eyed the limping pirate's holstered pistol. It wouldn't be too hard to subdue him, but how would he deal with the other two? Especially with his injury. He wasn't sure he could prevail in hand-to-hand combat. They carried on through the hanging bioluminescent plants through the tunnel. Tag mulled over various plans, lost deep in thought. But when a warm wind rustled his suit, all plans of escape and worries about his injury dissipated. His eyes went wide, and even his heart seemed to stop. What he saw next he never would have expected on a planet as frozen and dead as ETA-5. Chapter 27. A soft beep within Tag's EVA suit signaled that the atmosphere here was amenable to human life. Oxygen and temperatures were at acceptable, in fact, comfortable levels, but it wasn't the suitability of the environment that shocked him. The tunnel opened into a vast chamber. No, not a chamber, another world entirely. The landscape sloped deep into the belly of ETA-5, and Tag couldn't even see the end of this mammoth cave. Huge, tree-like plants sprouted in columns taller and wider than Earth redwoods. Their leaves, like those of the plants hanging from the ceiling or growing along the ground, glowed in light blues, dark purples, and vibrant reds. Wind whispered through those bright, enormous leaves, and the breeze wasn't the only sound. Calls, vaguely like earth birds, sang out in melodic choruses. Some bird songs came across as lonesome wails, while others were high-pitched sopranos rising and falling along musical scales. Somewhere in the distance came the rush of a waterfall and a river coursing over rocks. Tag thought he heard a more rhythmic noise, like that of a drumbeat, low and steady. A bird broke through the tree canopy, squawking and flapping six wings. A long, feathery tail drifted behind it, and its white feathers seemed to reflect the glow of the multicolored leaves it passed. Everywhere Tag looked, there was a strange insect or intriguing plant beyond his earthly imagination. The place was teeming with life. An underground jungle with sufficient bioluminescence to make it seem like day and more than enough biodiversity to rival the most beautiful of Earth's rainforests. A pistol jabbed at Tag's back and broke him from his awestruck trance. The harsh realities of this captivity and injury flooded back. He held his injured shoulder, and the pirates guided him through a path between the enormous tree trunks. "What is this place?" he cried. He was met with more responses from his captors that sounded like hisses and static. Maybe if he took off through the shrubs and tangled roots, he could lose the pirates in the dense foliage. But one of them seemed to sense his thoughts. The pirate grabbed his upper arm and forced him to continue with them. They soon made it to a clearing. A multitude of metal structures had been constructed around the glowing plain. The structures were squat and square-shaped, lined up in rows like a miniature city, decidedly out of place and crass in the woodland. A few vehicles, strangely shaped, were parked on the waving grass. Dark shapes moved between the vehicles and structures. Tag thought they were wearing suits like his captors. As they drew closer, he realized he'd been mistaken. Most weren't wearing full armor suits, and they weren't human. His knees buckled, and he almost crumpled. The pirate holding his arm tugged him and barked at him in his shrill, incomprehensible voice. The people around him weren't any kind of people Tag had ever seen. They wore fitted black pants, but their bodies were covered with a short layer of black fur. And their limbs. Each arm seemed to bend at angles that made Tag cringe. No human, without considerable genetic modification, could ever exhibit that flexibility. Their fingers were long and thin, moving as if they were jointed like a snake's spine. He wasn't the only one that was staring. They gazed back at him, pausing whatever they were doing, their yellow lizard-like eyes calmly measuring him up. A shiver snuck through him. Their faces appeared almost reptilian, except for the fur. No external ears poked off the sides of their skulls, just small holes in the sides of their heads. They had no prominent noses, though Tag spied slits he could only assume were nostrils. Long, thin lips cut across their faces,